Open your mind real wide now.
I'm freaking out, man.
You are freaking out, man.
What's up, my strange and unusual friends? My name is Kevin Gassman, and welcome aboard the Mothership Radio Show. This episode is a conversation with a comedian friend of mine who I met in Phoenix, Arizona years ago. His name is Keith Ellis, and we're also friends on Instagram. And that's where this whole thing started, when he replied to a photo that I posted from a movie called Big Man Japan, a very strange, unusual, and bizarre animated monster movie, and I highly recommend it. We went back and forth talking about how we're handling this downtime, not being able to perform comedy on stage, and Keith was performing on cruise ships, and we all know how that story ends. We also got into a deeper conversation about the pandemic, systemic racism, the George Floyd murder, and how people in society are handling it during this downtime. Then, of course, I asked him if he had seen any UFOs or aliens or ghosts, and he said he did. So I'm like, well, why don't you come on the show and talk about it? And he said, okay. So that's where we're going to go with this journey, talk about his personal experiences with the paranormal, and then we'll get into his other experiences with systemic racism and the Black Lives Matter movement. It's a very strange and unusual world, and we're going to discuss it with comedian Keith Ellis right here on the Mothership Radio Show.
Open the pod bay doors, Hal.
What if I told you I'd take you to a place you've never been and do something to you that's never been done?
I used to travel, and me and a friend, we got a hotel, one of those old spiral staircase hotels where you take the wedding picture at. It was out in New Jersey. So no one's staying there, and it was wintertime, and I'm running some stores, and it's in a parking lot where traffic can only come in one way. So it's two of us there, aside from the person at the front desk. And I was asked, hey, this place ever been haunted? He's like, oh, yeah, there's some things in here. Yeah. Okay. So it's got about maybe 9 rooms in the whole building itself. I remember one day it was snowing. Cars are covered with snow. Nobody drove in. And we're there for 2 weeks. And you look outside. Okay. In the morning, 6 o'clock in the morning, I heard upstairs like somebody's dragging either a bed or a chair across the floor. Just dragging. And I'm laying there like, no one's staying here. No one's been here for 4 days now. There's another car out in the parking lot. Now, I text my friend across in the other room. I says, dude, do you hear that dragging? He texts back, yeah, I thought we were the only ones here. I'm like, yeah, okay. So we wait, you know, get dressed 7 o'clock before we start running out to do what we need to do. Go down to the front desk and ask her. I says, is there anyone else standing here? Maintenance or anybody? She says, no one's here, just you two guys. I said, because it's only been here for the last 4 days. No one's checked in. We got a party coming in next week, but just you guys. Okay. So we look at each other. It's like, well, I heard some furniture being moved around upstairs. And she's like, no, you didn't. I'm like, yeah, we heard some furniture. Both of us heard it. And she said, well, there's nobody here. And she actually gave us the keys. She says, here, it's the master key. You can check all the rooms you want. So we went up there and we checked every room. Master room, jacuzzi in the middle of the floor, looking, checking all the rooms. I mean, we checked them thoroughly. Nothing. We're like, okay, maybe just playing on trees. He's like, no, I heard it too. So we're back in our rooms. And then the next morning, we hear it again about 6 o'clock. Just something. And we're like, what the hell is that? And then we go talk to her and she says, I heard something upstairs. And I'm like, is anybody here? No. She says, they said this place was haunted, but I've never really had any experiences. So we know that there is something. Ghosts don't bother me, but it was just one of those, like, okay, all right. Because even at some point, you could feel like you look around a room and you look for the vents, the air conditioning vents and so forth.
Right.
I felt that. Yeah, like, okay.
You felt wind on you?
Yeah. Was it like, you like the cold air? Oh, or just cool air? You're like, you just kind of look around like, okay, all right. Under the door, was it something coming? Was it a little breeze? Whatever. But then there's another time, my friend, just last year, we went to a hotel, walked in, the light was flashing on the desk. The desk lamp turned the light on, it was flashing. And I was like, oh, wow, we got a haunted room. We're joking. And he's like, ah, it's probably the bulb just loose. we're like, hey, if there's a ghost in here, flash the light again. And the light flashed again. And we're just like, okay, it's like probably because we're walking, the vibrations or something. So he goes to the lamp, he checks the bulb, it's good. He checks the base of it. And he's like, okay, cool, leave it alone. All of a sudden, I was like, come on. So we're both joking around. Hey, if you're a ghost, you know, flash the light again. And oh yeah, sleep in the black man's bed. Sleep in the black man's bed. he's been a swelling. So we were joking, and all of a sudden it flashes again. So he like checks the cord, checks the base of it. Okay, and then it finally stops. And he's sitting there. I was like, okay, we're cool. I mean, you want to go grab something to eat? I'm like, yeah, sure. So I'm sitting on the bed. He says, let me call my wife first. No, I'm sending her a video and let her know. Yeah. So he's like, all right, Keith. He's like, hey, honey. This is me and Keith. We made it to this point right here, and we're going to go grab something to eat. Oh, say hi, Keith. Hey, what's happening? Blah, 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 blah. And he's like, okay. So he says, okay, we shoot the video. And he's playing the video back, and he's like, holy shit. And I'm like, what? He's like, dude, I go look at the video, and we've looked at this video a lot. I'm sitting on the bed. All of a sudden, you see this light. Just, and we're like, Back that up. And we're looking around the room. We're on the second floor. It's like, there's no way a car could turn in and get a reflection. There's no way anything in that room could ever have a reflection. He looked at it again, and you see me on the bed, and it goes, and it just shoots away. And he is like, oh, shit. And now he's like, okay, we need to get out of the room. I'm like, no, man, this is my room. Sleep in the Venezuelan bed. He eats a lot. So I'm joking. But when you do it, we paused it. We stopped it. You can just see the light.
Wow.
It swirl and just moved on out.
Do you still have that video?
I asked him for it. He thought he had it. No, I'm going to contact him and ask him, can I get it? Because I don't know if he bought another phone, changed out a phone. Dude. But he was like, he didn't want to get rid of it. You've seen orbs, right?
Yes.
Okay. What do they call them? Orbs or what's it? Balls of lights.
Yeah.
Softball size.
Yeah.
And I remember I was younger, and me and my brother, we were walking in the back room. He's in front of me, and out from the wall, there was a stove and a cabinet. The orb came out, and it just went across the floor. And I'm walking, and my brother's in front of me, and I'm like, and I jumped up on a chair, and it was a bright blue, and I'm looking at it, and it's just, and I'm looking at my brother like, Johnny, look. He's turning this way. It's going, and it goes into the wall. It goes into the wall. I'm like, and he was like, what? You know, and my mother's like, you know, what are you screaming for? What are you screaming? Like, it was a light came through here. And she was, everybody's like, the next night, I turned the TV on, and I don't normally watch any church channels, flicking through the church channels, and they're talking about spirit balls, about the size. I'm just sitting there like, you get spirit balls. They're about the size of this. You get them in yellow. They come in different colors, yellow, blue, and green. And I was just like, okay. So I kept paying attention to that, but I saw the brightest thing came out, and it was 9 o'clock at night. I know it was dark in the kitchen light, and it just came out. And I just looked, jumped on the chair because I was so scared. And I looked at it, and it just hit right into the wall. Yeah. So I mean, that's just a couple of the things I've had the pleasure of, like, okay.
That's interesting. My first interview getting the show back on was with this artist. Her name is Belevolent, and she had said she had seen orbs in the sky. I can't say these are the same exact things, but she felt it was kind of like a being. It was an actual living thing. Did you feel that from this thing, or did you feel it was like alive, or did you feel?
Oh yeah, I mean, it had a nice glow about it.
You were scared because of what the hell is this thing? But
I've never seen anything. I'm like 13 years old, so when I saw that, I was just like, you know, it was just so bright and so real,
right,
on the floor. But it was just going across.
But you weren't scared of it. You were scared of the idea of it. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
You were like,
because I was thinking, like, because my mind couldn't grasp anything. I guess I hadn't filled enough in the database to figure out, like, what I was just this? Like, what is that? You know, I can't fathom what the hell that is.
Right.
And then it goes into the wall. And I'm like, did I see a ghost or something? Because back in the days, this was actually one of the weird things with my family. It's like my mother and father's house here, my grandmother's house here. So things would happen weird where, you know, you have those, the blinds you pull down. the shade you pulled out, and we could be sitting in the house, and all of a sudden, it just go up. Pop, 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 pop. My grandmother would be like, all right, someone just died in that direction. And be like, day later, somebody in the senior citizen home died. And I'm like, okay, all right, whatever. And then there's on the side of the house, we have them, and one in the category angle. We'll begin somewhere down the road, months later or whatever, another one goes up. And I started thinking, it's like, okay, that just, you know, it makes you jump because it just snaps. And then all of a sudden somebody would die in that direction in Canada, which is another small city in my city. And it'd be like, oh, okay. And then whenever it go across, I'd be thinking grandmother, grandfather, whatever. But it was just something they always thought, you know, when it goes up.
Right.
It's like, oh, somebody died over there. It's like, are you guys, is this something we should know? Because I've dealt with clairvoyance.
Okay.
And dated a girl who did tarot cards. Don't believe in any of that stuff myself. Because when I first met her, my friend said, oh, man, you should go out with so-and-so. You know, she's you guys make a great couple. I'm like, yeah, whatever. You know, whatever. So we met, and then my friend says, you should get a reading from her also. This is the first I ever met her. I'm like, okay. So we sit down. I'm like, never had cards read before. She's like, oh, I see your acting career is going to pick up. I'm like, yeah, okay. She must have told her I'm an actor, comedian, blah, blah, blah. Oh, I see. Well, the right people being placed in your life. Oh, you're going to get some. You're going to get some money from your father, and you're going to move to a large, you're looking to move back, large body of water, back Midwest. I'm thinking, not even thinking it. You know, like by the first of the year, you're going to move a large body of water. Not even thinking it. I left the place, drove home to 67th Ave in Canto, walked in my room. There's an envelope on the bed with money for my father. Before I backed into the driveway, I had picked up two acting gigs. I got a phone call. I got a phone call. It was like, you're hired for this. You're hired for that. It wasn't audition. You were hired. I was like, she said, your acting career is going to pick up. I'm like, okay. And I was like, okay. It's 2 out of 3. Not bad. This is in September, somewhere around there, August, September. January the 1st, my friends that I told you about in the Bay Area, I went out there in April, May, June to do I had met them, and I was out there for 3 months. I had met them, and over time, we became friends. He calls me in December and says, my friend is starting a company. I would make a great customer service thing, supervisor. And I was like, when you need me out there? He's like yesterday. Hmm. He says, I got a ticket at the airport for you, paid. You can stay with me for 6 months. After six months free, get the hell out. So I moved January 2nd, 3rd.
Wow.
To San Francisco, the large body of water. And till this day, we know each other. And she just says, you know, her friends, I used to hang around her friends. And like you said, their clairvoyance and the aura thing and all that, they would take pictures and I like your aura. I like your, you know, you got blues. I'm still thinking like, whatever. So I got to hanging around them so much. I saw an accident happen in my head. And 2 weeks later, I saw the accident exactly as it was. A white car. Slammed into the medium, down the freeway, and I was just like shaking my head because I started seeing things because of being in their company so much. It started actually, they were almost like, are they
rubbing off on you?
Huh?
It was rubbing off on you.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, they would teach me how to meditate, and I would listen, and it would quiet all the noise so you could actually hear, don't go here, go here. I left my house one day, and the voice was like, go back, because I needed to get a piece of paper, but I was like, oh, I can do it without the paper, and I'm still driving. And then you hear the voice, go back. I'm driving, and you hear it again, go back. And I was like, ooh, okay. So I backed the car the way up, back it into the driveway, walk into the house, the phone rings. I pick up the phone, how you doing? It was an agent. Hey, Keith, this is so-and-so. I got you down for a shoot tomorrow morning at 6 o'clock. You pay $720. Be there. Thank you. Click, and hung up. She don't leave messages. She would just move on to the next person.
Crazy.
She would just, so for that voice, she's like, go, go, go. You know, right. There's something you need. So when I picked that phone up and she was like, you got a job. It's going to take you 20 minutes, $720.
Wow.
I was like, okay. So I was actually, and when she actually said, she says, the right people are being put in your spot. So I did the movie Three Kings with George Clooney and those guys.
Okay.
And on that set, they said, we're going to shoot another movie in Dallas. if you want to be in that movie, you know, let us know. Or I said, I don't want to be a whatever. And they said, we'll get you a spot. So I go out there and I'm there. And this guy, I got two of the guys with me, and they were being kind of iffy. They were like, we were staying in a hotel. We didn't all have a lot of money. I think I'm the only one that had a little bit more money, but I'm paying. They would steal stuff from the hotel on the honor system, come back in the room. Yeah, we got chips. And I'm like, dude, why y'all stealing stuff? So this guy out of nowhere at the on the set says, hey, man, I'm an orthodontist. I got another apartment. Where are you guys staying? I'm like, we're staying in a hotel. He says, you ain't got to pay me for it. You can stay there if you want for free. All you got to do is buy food. And I said, but I don't trust these other guys. He says, I know you're not going to let them tear my stuff up. But I didn't like them, the way they were doing what they're doing. And I didn't. So I didn't. So this guy was like offering me a place to stay. Then I go in L.A. and I'm shooting this thing 2 weeks. And I got this hotel. It's $80 a night. I'm struggling. It's the second night. The third night, I'm walking back to my hotel at 4 o'clock in the morning because we shoot at 4 in the afternoon. So I'm walking through areas and I start looking at the wall and there's gang signs. I'm thinking, you look really good with the luggage, Keith, at 4 in the morning. It's like, you stupid, right. Stupid. You're like, you just waiting to get robbed. So I told, I knew some girls I was working with on the set. I told them, I said, hey, can you get me right back to my hotel after the show, after the night? That's the third night. She said, yes. Want me to pick you up in the morning? I'm like, no. I mean, tomorrow evening? No, I'll walk back. So I walk back. There's a guy standing in line. He turns around. He says, where are you from, man? Like Arizona. He says, where are you standing? I says, oh, I'm at the hotel. And he's like, you can stay at my place if you want. Throw me down some ends. And I was like, okay. Not even a hesitation in my head. It's like, okay. I went and told the girls that. And the girl's like, okay. You know him? I said, well, we worked together so far like 2 or 3 days on the set together. She wrote down her number, her boyfriend number, said, here's my number. If you don't feel comfortable with him, call us. We will pick you up on any corner that you let us know you're at if you need an out. So the guy that I stayed with, he basically, it was a Saturday, he got up to go, and I was laying there on the couch with that one eye open, like, I don't trust him. But he says, you know how to ride a motorcycle? I'm like, yeah. And he said, there's a BMW bike in the garage. If you need it, you need to do some errands, go ahead. And I stopped him before he went outside. I says, hey, dude, you don't even know me, man. And he's like, if I didn't trust you, you wouldn't be in my house. And he left. And we've been friends for 18 years. He's got me on other sets. And he said, she said, the right people. I mean, these dudes, three dudes just came out of nowhere. Just, I got you. Wow. And it's until this day, she keeps looking at me. She's just like, she's following me. She's like,
that's awesome.
Yeah.
That's so great.
I mean, that's, there's ghosts out there and everything else.
It's the intuition maybe we all have, is just a lot of us aren't able to tap into it. A lot of us aren't able to accept that it's real, that yeah. It's out there.
Yeah.
So they decide, no, I don't want to think like that. I don't want to accept that as a reality. But in actuality, there are synchronicities in life. And if you're, I believe if you're true and honest with your intent, then I believe the right things will fall in place for yourself. The right people will come in because you're
100%.
Yeah, because it's what. It's your intention. It's your goal. It's your mission. It's what you want in life that doesn't hurt anybody.
Like you said, if you stop and stop the noise, because what do we do every day? We're always running, got to do this, got to do that. If we actually just sit down, shut the hell up, and just for a moment listen to silence, I mean, I think we can actually grasp something from that and be like, you know, what's important? Ask yourself questions. What's important? What do I really need to do today? Should I not? I force myself to go work out, but that is my quiet time also, but it also makes me feel better because everything I do believe, everything does happen for a reason. While we're talking today, something happens for a reason. What's going to come of it? Don't know. But I know about you more now. It's like, okay. So in this field, you know, Danielle, right? Danielle Williams.
Yeah.
Yeah. See, it's like, I mean, everybody's talk shows or movies, radio, something. It's like we're all trying to work on something. So if you know the right people, you can connect whoever to do whatever to make something up. We should find a voice. We should find somebody to do cartoons. You can do voiceovers.
I know someone who does cartoons.
We should make our own little. My friend's out there writing a screenplay. And I was like, we need to come up with something just totally.
But you're right, though. It's getting the right people. I think, you know, when you're clouded and you're not thinking straight, you're not hanging around the right people who can help you because they're out to help themselves. Keith Ellis is with us here on the Mothership Radio Show. let's get into the, some of your comedy, because you posted a video of your stand-up, and it was it involved religion, the Bible, and which is interesting because, I've never read the Bible, and I only go by what I've seen on TV. But I did watch a movie or a couple documentaries about the end of the world, and the Bible gets brought up a lot on that. So I feel like I might be able to hang in this conversation. I don't know, but you brought up the Bible in one of your bits. Is that comfortable for you to do that on stage? Do you have to learn to get comfortable with it?
I've been in this business so long, honestly, just to say it like it is. If, like, when you get around your friends, you just talk. And if you see an opening, you insert and you go. The same thing, I don't care anymore. It's just, you either take me for what I am, because I'm going to say it, and whether you like it or not, and I'm not going to make everybody happy in the room, I'm good with that. And I'm used to quiet. I'm used to silence now. So when I stop talking, and I wait for the whole room to just, and I'll wait just so myself be more comfortable, and then I'll just say what I need to say, and you might get the, ooh, I don't care. I don't care. I mean, I think I have enough material where I think I can get you. I can get you back, but I'm not worried if I offend you, because I tell people I'm not PC. So I'm going to say some things. I might say the N word. I will say the N word, and just ooh, they get shocked, and then I'll just come back into it. But the Bible thing was just another observation. Somebody asked me to do a church once, and it kicked in right there, and I said it right there in that church. And after the show, it was a standing ovation, which I didn't notice it until I looked at the film later. But it was just a basic perception of Bibles. People have tablets, they have notebooks, and they don't have the Bible in their hand anymore. So I'm looking at this guy with the notebook, and he's like, we're going to turn this chapter of the Bible. And I'm thinking, I don't know if he's on Facebook poking people. How do I know he's actually on a Bible? How do I know he's not playing, you know, Candy Crush? I don't know that. And so maybe he goes into that.
Maybe he's like, Googling Bible.
Yeah, I don't know. He's not just, you know, he could get something that's wrong. He's like, let me find out. So I just said, I'm watching him. And he actually said he didn't have a good connection on the internet. I'm thinking, if you don't have a good connection on your tablet, I don't think you have a good connection with God. So why would I want to follow you? If you ain't paying your bill, you gotta BMW outside. And I'm like, so I've learned just whether the church and my family is a lot of there's pastors, there's deacons. I say my family is of the Richard Pryor side. So Pryor on this side, which is actually the gospel side, because when Richard spoke, he said his mom used to run a brothel. So that was okay. So on the other side, it was all religion. So my mother's father's brother, that was association with Pryors, they never spoke to each other. I have cousins that have contacted him. He's never got a response back from Rain, from any of his kids, none of that. So on this side, it was actually pimps and hoes. On this side, it was God bless you. And so I would always think on this side, we're like, we're praying for you. And this side, F y'all, you know, because they've never gotten in contact with each other. And it's just like, okay, so it is a relative on the prior side. It's just funny when I see that. And yeah, you see it like it is too.
I think that's true.
I have no limits to what I'll say. It may not be profanity, but I've always looked at, how do I get it across to people, even though it might be offensive? People are going to take your jokes anyway, and they're going to misconstrue it, because they're going to hear what they want to hear.
Right.
I've said things about police officers on stage and got approached afterwards. You shouldn't talk bad about the police, because, you know, we're all trying to come together. Like, I never say anything bad about cops. In my old days, when I was on stage, I was getting pulled over so much. I was actually on stage saying, save a friend, kill a cop.
No.
Didn't even have a problem with that. Then I went to Oakland and was doing a show, and I stopped saying it because I knew they would kill a cop. So that's when I'm like, no, Keith, you can't instigate.
Right.
You cannot be the one. You need to change it. So I pulled back and I started going, let me just go do clean then. Because, I mean, the anger from getting pulled over and all that was just building and building and building.
Yeah, I can't imagine, man. And that sucks to have to go through that sort of thing for no reason. You know,
did you see the video I put up called The Black Experience?
No, I haven't seen that one yet.
Okay, well, it's basically just a lot of things that happened. Me being pulled over by cops, pulled out at gunpoint, surrounded by cops, yada, yada, yada. And because some reason I did that video, because somebody said, when all this going on with the George Floyd and all, they were like, is that what happens, Keith? Does that happen to you? And I'm like, what? They're like, do you ever get pulled over? I'm like, shit, I still get pulled over. Even in Scottsdale, I get pulled. I'm like, yeah. So, and then another person asked me, is this what black people go through? And I'm like, yeah. So it kept, and I was like, let me put a video out and show you. Right. And I think in the 12 hours, I got like 6,000 hits, which shocked me. And I wasn't expecting that. And it was like a lot of people just like, wow, man, I didn't know that was happening with you. I'm like, yeah, I mean, you we're used to it. You're used to it. It's just like, yeah, whatever. We're a cop. Okay. Hands out the window. We already know. We know.
Yeah, it's getting exposed, which is good. You know,
yeah.
and hopefully that, I mean, basically what they need to do is just fire every single cop and just rehire new cops under certain training and under certain capabilities that they're able to handle certain situations. Because I think there's just so much out there that is just, like we say, the system is broken. It's all over the place broken. So, I mean, like,
you can be a hairdresser. It takes you longer to be a hairdresser than it does to be a cop. I think it's like 1,500 hours to be a hairdresser if you go to school, but it's less than that to become a cop. And I'm like, wow, somebody had put the numbers together. And I saw a cop once here in Arizona. It was a while back. I didn't think about using my phone, but there was a dude crossing the street with his girlfriend or wife or whatever. It was a woman, but it was a black guy crossing the street. He missed the crosswalk by one step. So he stepped, missed the crosswalk. Now he's in the crosswalk. He walks across the street. Cop's in front of me. He hits the light. Woo! I'm looking at it. He's like, he says, you weren't in the crosswalk. And he's like, what? He's like, you weren't in the crosswalk. He says, you need to go back and do it again. I was like, no, he didn't. And the dude was like, what? You what? And the girl's like, babe. And the dude was getting pissed. He's like, what? He said, if you don't go back, I'm going to cite you. They walk back across the street, get in the crosswalk, walk back. He looked at the cop with that look. The cop looked at him and says, I see how you're looking at me. He's like, what? He said, you mean mugging me. And I was waiting for him to say, smile, or you look at me with a smile or something. But he's like, you mean mugging me. And he just kept looking at him. And he says, I got my eye on you. I was just like, just because one step. So there's a lot of, you know, cops that have that mentality of authority. And you ever see when they pull you over, they never ask you, they tell you to do something.
Right.
I mean, if you came at me, it's like, you know, I'll need you to step out the vehicle, sir. It's like, get out the car, you know, get over here. They're telling you. And that mentality of being told something, nobody likes to be told something. If you come at me correctly, I'll step out the vehicle. But then they always do these little setup things, you know. I need to see your driver's license. I'm reaching for my wallet, you know. And they can set that up like, oh, you're reaching for a gun, whatever.
Right,
it's
right.
Like, so now it's just, it is what it is. But, you know, hopefully things change.
It's so, and it's so unnecessary. That's the other thing, you know. That's
it is.
It's just so completely unnecessary. And, I mean, having even police in general is becoming overboard, and, you know, just because of the toys they're getting now and all the military funding they actually get themselves. It's like, what are we doing here? You know, it's like,
what are we preparing for,
right,
really?
Right, right. What's going on here? What are you expecting us to do? I'm like, what's with the tanks and the bombs and the grenade
launchers?
You're selling
arsenals to people who are preparing because they know something's about to go down.
Right.
So they're buying a lot of automatics out there, you know. And
but the thing is,
artillery.
If you're the police and you're anticipating the public to, you know, riot and do bad things, and you're there, I mean, it's almost antagonizing it a little bit, isn't it? You're showing, like, look at that couple at their house in St. Louis. They come out with their guns ablazing, you know. He's got the AK. He's like, yeah, get away, love, man. And she's got her little gun. She's freaking out with the pickle, you know. I'm like, all right, first of all, I don't know exactly what happened. I'm guessing they didn't have to come out of their house. But they came out of their house because they wanted to.
We're going to protect ours.
We're going to protect, right. You didn't have to come. You come out of the house, you're going to draw attention. If you didn't come out of the house, they would have walked right by and walked right out of that neighborhood, and it would have been done. But they felt in a way to, I don't know what they felt, to come out of their house and do that. But when you do something like that, you're bringing that on you.
So in other words, you say they didn't even pay attention to the house until they came out the house. Nobody was even looking at the house.
Right. They didn't care about that.
They had one. The house like, yeah, we're gonna, and you're like, we're gonna protect ours. And like, really?
Right.
Who's talking to you people?
Now you're insinuating.
Where'd you come from?
Right. But now you're insinuating we, the rioters, are here just to dilute and break into anything that's available. And that's not what they're doing. They had a mission to go to a certain house and then leave. That's what they did. But, you know, you come out, get off my lawn, man. Apparently, they confiscated their guns. But then I saw online today a story of people offering them guns.
What?
Saying, like, the police came in and confiscated their guns because they brandished weapons. Whatever, I don't know whatever the reason was. Yeah. I didn't look into it. I semi-care about the story.
And then somebody offered them weapons?
Apparently, they're getting offers from people and say, hey, well, maybe gun stores or, you know, whatever it is. Are saying, isn't that weird? You know, I wanted to go.
Like, okay. You said, if somebody, you in your own house, you got your guns, and like you said, why would I be outside? Break in. I'm just going to shoot you.
Right, right.
You're in my house, but I'm not going to come out and show you what I got.
Yeah.
I'm just going to wait for you. I'm going to. Are they still walking by? Yeah. Okay. Well, let's just turn the channel. Let's turn the channel. Right. Oh, somebody's coming up to the doorway. Well, get in your position.
That's what I would do. I'd be out. Peeking out the window, going with my gun ready to go. All right, these people come into my house.
In the house.
They're going to get a taste of lead, you know.
But they're standing out front. So if they shot anybody, they're done.
Yeah, because I don't know. Again, I'm semi-interested in the story. I don't know if they actually got onto their property. I don't think that happened ever. I think because they were in private property overall, the whole place was private property. They got through in the gates that way. I don't know. Apparently they broke down the gates and went through it. But coming back out, they were just on the way home, basically. And that's when they came out and panicked. And, you know, there's a song by the Kinks called Destroyer. Paranoia, the Destroyer. Look, I would be nervous too. I'm not lying. If I had a gun, I would be holding it and ready to go. But in my house. Going, come on.
Oh, they'd be sitting there. I'd be sitting like,
right.
Okay. All right, let's see. Locked doors, window cracking,
right?
Something in the yard, dog barking. Yeah, I would definitely be okay. Yeah. Right, it's like it's a lot. I can understand. I mean, nobody's looking to loot. You got your protesters, you have your looters, and you have your rioters. And the protesters are checking the rioters from damaging things. The ones that are actually legit, they're like, dude, you're not even with us. Why did you bring a hammer? Right. Would you bring a hammer?
Yeah, and that's the thing. I think doing their protests away from, you know, shopping malls and stuff like that, where these looters can come in and take advantage of that. I don't know. It's a weird world we've developed for ourselves. And going back to the 70s, where everything was on the table, you know, going back to comedy in the 70s. Let's get back to that for a second,
because
we were so open with each other on TV. You know, we had, you know, the Jeffersons, you know, Sanford and Son, What's Happening. You know, we had Archie Bunker, you know, I mean, All in the Family. So you were
I still watch those shows, man. It wasn't the Golden Girls, but the one lady that was on there with Don Cheadle, when she put the Confederate flag up, I'm thinking that was way back then. Mm.
Have you seen Maude? That's Bea Arthur. Yeah. She had a show in the 70s. Maude was kind of like, she was the female antithesis of Archie Bunker. So she was the progressive liberal white person, whereas Archie was the conservative, you know, Republican dude. But Bea Arthur was more liberal, and that was the rub that they had with each other. Maude came from another show, and I want to say it might have been All in the Family. I'm not sure. I'll have to double check that. You know, the Jeffersons came from All in the Family.
Right.
George Jefferson.
Did she come from the Golden Girls?
No, she was on. No, Maude was way earlier than that.
Oh, okay.
Maude came from Good Times. Dynamite!
She did?
Yeah.
Even when Sanford and Son, when they even used the N-word on the Jeffersons and on Red Fox, on the Sanford and Son, it was funny because it was like, did they just use the N-word on TV? And it was like, wow.
That's what's wrong with the court, Judge. A black man ain't got a chance down here.
I'm black.
Well, you the judge, that don't count. Listen, why don't you arrest some white drivers?
I do.
You do? Well, where are they? Look at all these niggas in here. Look enough n***s in here to make a Tarzan movie.
Order. Order in this courtroom.
And that could have been a...
And the audience just went crazy.
Right. Those are part of my staples of watching TV. I mean, I had a crush on Winona from Good Times, you know? I did. And, I was 8, 9, 10 years old, you know? I mean...
You're nothing wrong with that. Winona. Mm-hmm.
She was attractive. And,
yeah.
And so I'm like, was impressionable to me. So, and somehow along the way, we started regressing away from that. Because I think when we had so much of that openness with each other, and somehow it got become PC, not PC, but we became more conservative and more, let's not do that anymore. That's not, and then kind of like that's too good for us in a sense of, am I making sense or?
I know something. Yeah, it's something just kind of there's something that I don't know. Something like they say that what they call something shifted where all of a sudden there was that mentality of control factor or manipulation or they're getting too strong. They're getting too much attention. Something.
Right. It was getting too good. It was getting too popular. I mean, Blazing Saddles is a great example of all that, too. I mean,
they're pulling all these shows off. It's like,
Have you ever seen
this? To get people, this broke the ice in a lot of ways,
right,
too.
Right, and that's what.
I mean, Richard Pryor, like you said, they were honest. Richard Pryor was honest. George Carlin was honest. Everybody spoke their mind and said what they said. White people, black people, and it's just like, okay, all right. But nobody actually, like you have the social media now, but nobody could actually, okay, Richard Pryor's talking about this and that. Okay, is he only seeing it in Illinois? Is he only seeing it only in his area so people don't really see it? Mm. So when I think about the COVID thing and how wonderful that came to be because it made everybody sit down, made them be still, and then George Floyd got killed, everybody had to actually see that and they saw a man get killed and they saw Aubrey, another guy got shot, and it's just like, because if society was still moving, if the COVID hadn't kicked in, those probably wouldn't have been no big deal. I mean, it's just like, oh, guy got shot. You know, in a sense,
another story.
Guy got killed by a cop. Nobody would have been paying attention. It would have been like, but now they had to actually sit down and listen and see it. And the woman in the park screaming about, he's threatening me. And he didn't do anything. And he's just filming it. So all the Karens, because that's really scary to me, in a sense. Because, I mean, being a comic and you, even in entertainment, you travel. Somebody can just throw a word and lie on you and just say, you know, he tried to rape me. And your career is done. And it's not even what they say, but you only got somebody else's word to go against. So those are the scary things right there. So back in the 70s, people said what they said, did what they did. And, you know, it was kind of like word of mouth. Okay. That's funny. Yeah. Okay. We never know that's happening. Is systemic racism alive? Is it not? Is it alive? We don't really know. But people didn't see it.
But think about, all right. So in the 70s and all that, and you know, those shows bridged a gap between cultures, and they did. And, you know, I mean, I grew up in LA. I went to school with every single nationality and gender.
Mm-hmm.
I got, you know, kids were bussed in from LA to go to my school. I mean, that's where I live. That's how I live. That's how I grew up. So being integrated and working and learning that other people are just like you, man, just like you and me, we're just the same. So when you had that going on, all of a sudden that stopped, or that stopped being the focus. If that was going to continue on, because that did bridge a gap a lot between a lot of people, and it made people to realize, hey, we are all the same, man. There's no difference between any of us. So when they hushed that down a little bit, I mean, if they had kept that going on, we'd be in a different world, I believe, today. We'd be in a more compassionate world and a more caring and a more empathetic world to people who were being, you know, treated, who were being mistreated for so long. And it's like, it's sad.
There's
to
brainwashing.
See
there's still that brainwashing that goes on, and it's still that, like you said, in the history books, the history, how it's lied so much or it didn't tell the full story. So there's a lot of people that's sitting there like, but this, and some people like don't want to believe it, don't want to accept it. Nope, this is how it is. And there's a sad part. There's a sad part when we look at the mentality of people, and when people say, go back where you came from. Mm.
And then you look at white people and it's like, well, then we, none of us belong here. Let's just give the Indian their land back. You know, it's like, they're the ones that it's the indigenous. So why are we saying, you know, you telling me to go back? And it's like, why don't we all just get on, just go our separate ways, go back to England and,
right.
and go back to, well, and the Indian's like, finally, get that casino down.
Oh, yeah, right. Get that crap out of here.
We want to do some crop.
But think about how many, I mean, we're generations away from any of us being alive back at that time. So none of us had anything to do with that back then. Here we are now trying to survive with each other. And it's like, why is this even happening? Why are we against each other? There's no reason for it.
But I mean, in a sense, when you actually look at the actuality of, okay, if you say 40 years for slavery, 265 or somewhere around there. Okay. That we got that going on. All right. Then you have what's happening nowadays. And a lady, I'll send you, just so you could get an idea where it's like, we're in a game, but we're never supposed to win. Because if they did the redlining, we're never supposed to win. Drugs never came into the neighborhood until somebody brought them into the neighborhood. We're never supposed to win. Job-wise, we're never supposed to win. So I'm doing part two of the Black Experience. And I know we're talking, this is comedy, but it's like the Black Experience of just like, well, what are we supposed to do? Black athletes do this, they come up in the game and so forth, but we're never supposed to win. Me and a friend used to do a test once back in the 90s and so forth. Car dealership. All right, man, I'm going to go over there. See that Pathfinder? It's off of Camelback. You go in there. I wanted him to see that things were racist. And he was like, nah, you go in there, ask him how much for that Pathfinder. He go in there and ask him. Okay. I think it was like 11,000. I'll go in there a day or two later. It's 13,000. And he's like, nah, bullshit. Go get another white guy. Go check it out. 11,000. Go get a black guy, send him in there, 13,000.
Wow.
And I was like, I said, whoa, you think, and I'm joking. And I said, so now you just saw that. So I still test things like that.
Wow.
I mean, I still, because it's not, my mother's 90. They were fighting for civil rights back then. And we're still fighting for the same thing right now.
That's
so equality is all we want. And anybody want, even the Klan. I saw this dude named Daryl Davis, I believe is his name, and black guy. And he used to go to Klan meetings. They let him go to Klan meetings. And the Klan guy said, I respect him. I mean, he says, I would follow that man, that black guy, to the ends of the earth. And he said, why? People were like, the other Klan, like, what? And he says, because he respects me. That's basically all it is. That's all I said. You don't have to like me, but if we could respect each other, we don't have to say hi down the street.
Right.
Just respect each other. It doesn't have to be walk down the street and you like, you know, find something nasty. Say, just if you have a flat and if I can help you out, fine. If vice versa, but respect each other. That's basically it. So when I talk about other things, when it's still alive and well, when people are like, no. If I go to a restaurant, I did a show in Mill Valley and I saw my friends. I call them seven brothers, black, white, Hispanic. We've been 15, 18 years in the game together, just friends of mine. One couple of them millionaires and I mean, well off. So we go to a restaurant, I meet one. I didn't know the other one was gonna be there. I meet the Mexican guy there. I'm like, hey Randy, what's up, man? We go. I watch the restaurant. He walks us all the way through the restaurant. Tables are open in certain areas, through a side, okay. Open, back by the kitchen door. Almost like out. And I was like, dude, why are we put so far back in the restaurant? It's like, do we look like thugs or what? And he didn't see anything wrong with us. I said, pay attention. There's open tables everywhere else. He went past five tables to put us in the back. The server won't even know we're here, really, unless they peeked around the corner to know that. And he didn't see it. So I can go to Scottsdale. My drink price has increased. When I'm there, I watch people, $6 for a glass of wine, $10 for me, same glass.
All right, that's the type of stuff that no one knows about, because
That's why I put that video out. I mean, there's a part two coming out.
You saw, I'm sure you've seen Eddie Murphy when he goes paints himself white. And he's not, everything's free, it's a party when they're all alone.
Slowly I began to realize that when white people are alone, they give things to each other for free.
It's like, first of all, I'm going to tell you that it's not like that, okay?
I'm like, tell me, Gasman, what's going on, man? Is it true? Is it, dude, you're missing out?
I don't get for free, dude, all right? I'm going to say that much right now.
Can I be the driver at least?
I just, hearing stories like that, I mean, the Pathfinder and, you know, the restaurant, I mean, that's, those are things people need to be aware of, you know, because, you know, you're right, keep an eye out for those kind of things, because that's what's really, that's the underlying thing that's happening here, man. There's just so much, people don't get to see those things. You know, like I said, it's a one-on-one thing that, I mean, we need to recognize more often when this stuff happens. You know, like if I don't know how can I help? How can I recognize that kind of thing?
But check it out. This is some of the things. I mean, if I go restaurants, I'm going in a restaurant, me and other comedian, Bob Kubota, matter of fact, we'll go sit in a restaurant and okay. This one here, we just said, let's just call it. We went to a Denny's. It was actually a Denny's and we sit there and I watched the person seat other people, brought them water, whatever, you know, okay, they want a coffee, okay. Me and Bob's still sitting there. And Bob's like, do they know we're here? I'm like, well, they seated us, yeah, so they know we're here. And they're just, okay, waiting. 15 minutes goes by, 20 minutes. They finally come back over. It's like, oh, you know, can I help you? Yeah, you know, we want to get this and that. But the other people almost getting there, about to get their meal. So if something happens like that, I've had people also where I've gone to a restaurant to sit down and eat. And I get in there first, and then other people come in. They seat them. It's like, if I get bad service, maybe I won't come back. That maybe it could be one of their thoughts. Maybe he won't come back if we give him bad service. But they've sit across from me and they'll say something like, can I help you? They're like, no, he was here first. You know, so now they've stepped up and like, no, he was here first. You know, because
I've done that before.
We've seen that. And it's just like, that's what I'm looking at. That's cool. And sometimes you even get the way it's like, no, they, you know. It's like, no, they actually recognized. So now it's like, you know, stop. Why are you taking care of us when they've been sitting here way longer?
Yeah, I've done that. I don't know if it was a situation like that exactly, but regardless of any situation, if someone else is sitting there long before I am there, I'm going to make sure they get served before I do.
Yeah,
it's just basic
at least.
At least,
I mean, right. there's always something that's going on, and whether it's the jobs I have, and I use the white voice, as you say, every black person has the white voice. Because I called in to let them know, blah, blah, blah. And then I get there and I'm like, hi, this is Keith Dulles. They're like, oh, you know, you're looking for the white guy? You know, basically, were you? I worked the job for 5 years. I was the only black person on the sales team. I had other black people that wanted to be on it, but they didn't have the articulation or the enunciation aspect of it. This and that, you know what I'm saying? You know, they talk like that, you know what I'm saying? And so they couldn't put them in, they didn't want to put them in front as a salesperson, but here you have a black guy that can sell on the South Side and can sell in Scottsdale. So I've sold all around this valley, you know, and it's like 5 years. Then I took a white girl to the Christmas party. My check dropped. I got demoted.
Really?
When I walked through the office after I went to talk to the president, and he's like, oh, no, Keith, you're like, you know, no, we had to rearrange some things. I'm like, oh, okay. As I go through the office, I hear somebody says, so who are you going to bring to the next Christmas party? And I look back and I'm like, what's going to piss you off? Asian? Mexican? What? Filipino? I'll bring it. I'll challenge you. I have not a problem with that. Yeah. So that, I mean, there was an attack in that area. I used to work at a grocery store. I busted somebody. The cop comes in. I got the guy sitting on the corner. The cop sits down. And he looks at me. He's like, so why'd you steal it? And I looked at the cop and I said, it's him. And he's like, okay.
It's a lot of shit and he's getting raised.
That's comedy, man. That's comedy for me. That's why I'm like, I love comedy because it's like, I laugh this stuff off, dude. It's just, it's the mindset, the things that people do perception-wise, it's just like, if I let it get to me.
You only laugh it off because it's happened a lot to you. And you have to, I've learned to turn it around
It's like, okay, how can you educate people to what's happening to you. Turn it into jokes.
Right.
So when I go to the store, it was a joke at one point when I talk about the lady in a grocery store because I worked there and she's like, you look like you could pick a good watermelon. She could have just been saying it because I was in the produce section.
Right.
She might not have been thinking anything else, but I was thinking my friend put her up to that because he's black
and there was only two black people there, but he wasn't working that day. And she was just asking me, you're in the produce section, you work at the grocery store, you look like you can pick a good watermelon. Mm-hmm. Just an older woman saying that, rather garlic, white woman saying that. I heard black people say that too. You look like you can pick a good watermelon. Like, you know what you're, you know. So it's all in how you want to accept it. So I didn't take it personal, but I thought it's a good joke.
Right.
And people get all still offended. Oh, and there's people have methods. I got to remember that. Yeah, and I don't even like watermelon. I didn't want to do comedy. It's just gonna make a person laugh.
It's yeah, I know. And I'm like, it's I wish this wasn't, you know. What do you think it would take for people who are fearful that they're gonna get taken over, that they're gonna ones that are gonna be enslaved and do the same things that they did? I mean, what would you tell someone like that who thinks like that? Because you say most these racist white people are afraid, or even government who are in charge, that they're afraid if they relinquish their power to another ethnicity, to another immigrant, you know, that the white person isn't in control anymore. That's what they're fearful of.
Mm-hmm.
How would you?
I would just say it wouldn't happen, because I know on the black side, you just look, a lot of black people, all they do is forgive. I mean, you know, they basically it's been within them singing whatever slave songs they had to sing and manipulate. It's always been, I forgive him for, you know, shot my son. God's got to deal with him. I'm going to forgive him. I don't see people actually getting up in arms like, I'm giving me a white slave. That's because it would be somebody like, don't treat them like that because they treated us like that. That's just how it would be. I mean, I ran companies before and I've had the opportunity where I could just do shit, but I'm just like, I still can't. I'm still like, nah. So be an example. It wouldn't happen. There wouldn't be slavery. There might be a couple around here. They might want to find their own island, but I'm getting me some honkies. No.
I'll tell you what, I might be able to point you to a few. Hey, they're useless. These guys are useless. Get them out of here.
They're like, oh my God. I'm like, see, they needed us. I'm like, don't you guys whip them? Whip them. No, I wouldn't see that happening. I don't see.
Yeah, I know. And that's the thing is you know what it really comes down to, man? They just need a hug, man.
Dude.
And I mean, they need to cry on a shoulder and think like, it's like, come out, man. Just say you're hating people for no reason just because you think you're supposed to hate them. And
I thought some incidents were going to pop up with me a couple of times with some white people, either driving by or something. I was actually to the point, right? Can we go get a coffee together and just sit down and talk? That's it. No yelling, no screaming. Just why you don't like blacks? And
right. What's your problem?
I give you my side of the story. And then afterwards, we ain't got to say shit to each other after that. You got my viewpoint. I got your viewpoint. All right, man. All right. That's all I wanted to know, because I really don't know. I really don't know why there's so much hate towards certain races. So you were basically demonstrating dislikes towards me, so I just wanted to talk to you and ask.
We talked a little bit about, you know, the pandemic and how that affected your job, obviously, because you can't go on cruises anymore to do comedy on cruise ships. And then you're looking at, well, all this time down, is it time to self-reflect as this nation has seen horrible things on TV and there's nothing to do but to see that. So it is a time to self-reflect. So it is a time to look upon. This is something that needs to be addressed, and everybody needs to address it, whether you think you're a racist or not, or you just, you know, it's time to look.
Yeah.
It's time to look at things. Going, wow, was I a victim of white privilege? Yeah, this is great, man. I really appreciate your time, dude.
No, thank you for taking the time to put up with me and listen to my craziness, man.
No, I dig it.
All right, my brother, man. Well, you take care and look forward to that next time.
All right, man.
Black lives matter.
Black lives do matter, man. Truly an eye-opening conversation with comedian Keith Ellis. I want to thank him for his time, for sharing his personal stories as well. If you missed any of it, it will be available in podcast at themothershipradioshow.com. Podcast platforms like Spotify, Apple, Google, Overcast, as well as anchorfm.com. So until next week, my name is Kevin Gassman, reminding you to stay strange and unusual, and come back next week for another episode of The Mothership Radio Show.
Watching the skies.